Sentire Media.
Ciao a tutti and welcome to Venice Talks, a podcast series dedicated to Venice in Italy. I'm your host, Monica Cesarato, a Venetian food and travel blogger. Join me as I share my insider knowledge to help you explore Venice at 360 degrees. In this weekly podcast, we'll dive into the heart of the city, uncovering hidden stories and connecting with the people who make Venice unique. The artisans, the writers, the fashion designers, the bloggers, the journalists, and more. Let's break free from cliché and discover the true essence of Venice, not just the monuments, but the vibrant people, the Venetians. Experience Venice the right sustainable way. You can find me on my blog at www.monicacesarato.com and across all social media platforms. Enjoy the episode and let's journey through Venice together. Welcome back to Venice Talks, Season 2, Episode number 7. Hi everybody, welcome back to Venice Talks. Today another very special guest. She's already been on the show on the last season and I'm so happy to have her back again. And is my dear friend, one of the best guys in Venice, Monica Gambarotto. Ciao Monica, how are you?
Ciao, Monica. We have the same name, apparently.
That is the best name in the world, of course.
In the world, definitely. I'm fine, thank you. Thank you. It's been raining for the past 2 weeks, and so I know. the mood is not really the best.
I feel like I should build an ark and call myself Noah. Because, I'm looking outside. I don't live in Venice, but I feel like I am because I'm surrounded with fields that are literally flooded with water. So I do feel like I'm in the middle of a lagoon right now.
Yes. Do I believe that? But anyway, okay, the weather's getting better.
So last time we spoke about your tours, we spoke about children, because you do tours with the children that obviously we're going to mention later on anyway. But today we decided we wanted to talk about something that we both have very, very, very dear to our heart, and that are the artisans in Venice.
Exactly.
So first of all, I mean, I know, but I would like everybody else to understand. Let's rephrase this. Let's go right from the beginning. Where does this passion for artisanship, not just art, but for artisanship, for trade, for the skills, comes to Venice? Because we're not talking just now. It's been thousands of centuries since Venice was born that the skills and the trades have been important. Why?
Well, there are several reasons. Of course, everything in a city like Venice had to be manufactured for a large amount of people, because Venice was a very cosmopolitan city with a whole lot of inhabitants. It would be necessary then to produce anything that was needed for the population. But this is the story that, takes place in a whole lot of cities. It doesn't make Venice different from Florence, from Rome, from other areas that would be so crowded as far as the population was concerned. What is different in Venice used to be different. We're talking about the past of Venice, is that Venice specialized in luxury goods, in luxury products. So the artisans of Venice in the past would produce special goods that could be found only in Venice, or if they could be found also elsewhere, well, in Venice, the quality would be much higher than in any other place. Let me just name the cuori d'oro, the gilt leather, for example, that would be used for furniture like, armchairs, sofas, or just as panels that you would keep on the walls for decoration. And it's really something amazing that we still have in some of the museums, because now they're museum objects. And a lot of people, a lot of wealthy people in the past that needed such gilt leather would come to Venice. The Venetians became excellent goldsmiths at some point, not for their entire history. We know that Florence eventually became an excellent place for jewels, as well as Vicenza, by the way, nearby Venice. But at some point, Venice was one of the capitals for jewels because Venice would import a whole lot of precious stones from faraway countries, from China, India, from those areas, from where most of the other European merchants would be excluded simply because it would be so difficult to travel that far, right? Well, just a parenthesis, this year we celebrate the 700th years after Marco Polo's death, right?
The anniversary of his death,
700 years later. And Marco Polo was probably not the first, but the one that left so much information about such faraway countries. And just to stress the fact that the Venetian merchants and travelers were explorers. They would go to such faraway places with the aim of importing something that was absent in Europe. And Venice became such a great market for such luxury goods coming from such countries that at some point, everybody in Europe was forced to come to Venice to find such goods.
And also forced to sell them here. So it was a
and
both
to sell
way.
Them here, exactly. And at that point, you know, having so much, let's say, precious raw material coming from such faraway countries, the Venetians became excellent artisans in using such materials. We're talking now specifically of precious stones to create I wouldn't say jewels, but works of art.
Of course. We can honestly say, I mean, we can definitely pinpoint made in Venice was born then.
Well, yeah.
You know, what we call made in Italy now, we already had a bit made in Venice.
Made in Venice back then. It is correct. One other thing that, if I can add, thing that probably was of great importance for the Venetians to specialize in particular in producing luxury goods was the fact that, you know what, no matter what, no matter if there is a war, no matter if there is famine, no matter if something goes wrong, the rich will always remain rich. So there will be always demand for expensive goods, maybe with a little bit of affliction, maybe a little bit less, but there will be always demand for
when you trade in luxury goods, it means that if you're in the middle of a war, generally you're always treated in a different way because you're the trade of a luxury goods. Listen, what's also very interesting about Venice, that all of this was controlled by the corporations, but it was very, I know it was used in other parts of Italy, but in Venice it was really, really particular, right?
Yes, exactly. Such corporations, such guilds would be called the scuole in Venice. That today, the term is today translated into school, but it's not proper because there would be no schools where to learn what to do, how to work or whatever. It would be guilds, sort of trade unions, let's say.
Syndicates, unions. They were a mix of everything, weren't they?
Yeah, it was a phenomenon that was, as you were saying before, it was common all throughout Europe. In Venice, though, it was very specific in the sense that every person that was doing a particular job was necessarily asked to join the guild, the scuola. Otherwise, she wouldn't have the right to keep on working. These guilds would be very strictly regulated by a system of rules called the Mariegola. And it's all because I understand we're speaking English to a public that is
No,
English
it's only right to
speaking,
say, no, it's right to
but
use the right
it's
terms and then to
yeah.
explain what they are.
But the interesting thing that I wanted to stress, especially for a non-Italian speaking public, is that Mariegola is not even an Italian word. It's
No, it's not
Venetian,
Venetian. Yeah,
right?
yeah, yeah.
So there are specific words that cannot be actually translated
Yeah.
into Italian concerning the history of Venice, and in particular the guilds we're talking about.
The Mariegola really was like the book of law of each
Yeah,
corporation.
the rules of each corporation, but it comes from la madre delle regole, the mother of rules, which is
Novice?
something. Well,
Oh,
it's
okay.
one of the possibilities, one of the options about the
Okay.
origin of the name, of course, not necessarily the only one, right? So, how do you translate it? You can, interpret the word, but sometimes there is not even a real translation for the
Of
word.
course.
Anyhow, these guilds would have such strict rules that they were supposed to follow. Very importantly, they were supposed to give mutual support to those that maybe were sick, to those that had trouble. So they would support each other in case of necessity.
Well, also,
And
for example, if one of a member, one of the artisans, one of a member will die, they will take care of the family,
of
wouldn't
the
they?
family, of course, in particular, if the person left a wife with several children that were very, very young, very little, and couldn't work. Yes, of course. Same thing, if you at some point had you were too old to work, and you had no money at
Oh,
disposal,
okay.
of course they would take care of you. Because, being an artisan back then could mean that you could earn only for the day.
Of
And
course.
you could not really save a lot of money
Of
for your
course.
future years, right? And
But
sometimes,
still, he was
yeah.
a beautiful. I mean, if you think he was such a forward and ahead of time
Oh,
way
yes.
of holding the
Oh,
city, because
yes.
I mean, that's one of the reasons why Venice managed to stay independent, I think, is because of his system of corporations.
Yes, it was some sort of a welfare system that was private in the sense that it was not granted by the state, but in any case it was regulated by the state because all these rules that the corporations had to be approved by the state, and the state would control such organizations,
And obviously,
such
they control
guilds
the
strictly.
and they control the taxes that the corporation will take
Of
from
course,
the
well, that
and they were.
yeah.
Am I wrong in saying that Venice had one of the highest taxes in Europe back then? I think they were. I know. I read somewhere that they were
Yes,
very high.
yes. The system of taxation was very high, but I feel that somehow it was fair, because we had no upheavals, if you think, in the Venetian history against the state because of too high taxation, meaning that which instead would happen in other areas, in other countries. I mean, people that would have to pay everything they had in taxes with no money left for a living, right?
Of
This
course.
actually, for centuries at least, never happened in Venice. I'm not saying that there would be no poor,
No,
right?
of
There would
course.
be poor,
But
but
even the poor were looked after in a way, were they? I mean,
exactly,
obviously they weren't rich or anything like that, or at least
No,
we
but at
are
least
poor as we are.
they would have a place where to stay at and something
Exactly.
to eat every day, right?
Exactly.
At
Exactly.
first, because of some institutions that would assist them, and then they would be helped in finding a job or, doing something. So really, really poor people that were starving, were absent in Venice at least for centuries, right? Or they would be a very short amount of, sorry, a very small amount of people.
Monica, an another thing
So,
that I wanted to ask you is about the what we call mestieri in Venetian, the
Yeah.
crafts, the arts and crafts.
Arts and crafts.
It was that because Venice was a cosmopolitan city, because of course he had the territories all over Europe, he was also very clever in inviting artisans from all of these
Coming from
parts of Europe to
outside.
come and live in the city. And then many of the arts, and now we take for granted and we say, Oh, yes, they are typical from Venice. Actually, they originate from some other parts of the world, and then we made them ours. Like
It is
the mosaics, right?
Yes, well, that's probably the most outstanding example that you could make, actually. Well, you know, mosaics, it's a very ancient tradition, after all, but so we go back, you know, thousands of years ago, as far as mosaics are concerned. But Venice inherited the technique of, in particular, glass mosaics, not only, but in particular, glass and gold mosaics from Byzantium, Constantinople, which is today Istanbul. The strange thing that the same city has three different names, but of course, this depends on its history. And yeah, Venice was became really excellent in the production and creation of mosaics that they would produce for themselves, but also for other places, for other countries. Let's say Florence. If you go to Florence and visit the baptistery, you will find Venetian mosaics inside the baptistery, created by Venetian masters. One interesting thing that I found out recently, my fault that I didn't know about it, and it was like shocking. I've been to Genoa recently, and at some point I entered the city hall that was opened exceptionally. Some of the rooms were open exceptionally on that Sunday, and I entered the main hall. And I saw two mosaics, one representing Cristoforo Colombo, the other one representing Marco Polo in Genoa. And, you know, the Genoese would be the enemies of Venice for of so long, right? Anyhow, they were present there both as travelers and explorers, right? And those mosaics, although late mosaics, we're talking about the 1800s and not of the Middle Ages, right? But they were made by a Venetian company. So even later on, and not only in the Middle Ages or during the Renaissance, but even later on, the Venetians would be considered, and somehow are still considered, among the best mosaic makers and producers in Italy, definitely, possibly in Europe.
It's really funny. A lot of people don't actually also realize that the gondola, that obviously is Venetian, but the original people that started to do the boats weren't from Venice. That's really funny.
I mean,
they were from the mountains.
Not only the gondolas, actually. Most of the carpenters that would take care of boats originally would come from the mountains. And the reason is that the wood came from the mountains, from the Alps in particular, not only, but in particular from Cadore, which was part of the Venetian Republic, right? And it's funny that, you know, when you visit a squero, a little boatyard where, and there are very few today left in Venice, the little boatyard where the gondolas are still created, are still produced, construction is the building when where everything takes place is made out of wood itself, and somehow it reminds of the huts that you could find in the mountains in the past, right? And the gondola itself, we don't even know whether it was originated in Venice or the Venetians brought it from outside. We don't even know the origin, although again there are several options, several possibilities, but we don't even know the origins of the word gondola. We just know that the first time we find the word gondola was in a document that dates back to 1094.
That's quite far.
Yeah, it's centuries, almost 1,000 years ago.
We can say it's traditionally Venetian. Come on.
After 1,000 years,
Right, so let's jump to the present, because obviously we want to give decided among you that because we both love artisans of Venice, and we're trying to support as much as we can, but we wanted to explain to the public what, where this love comes from and why so much for Venice and maybe not a bit less for some other parts of Italy. But let's mm-hmm. go to the present. So let's talk about now. Mm-hmm. So you obviously, you know, I'm in the middle of writing a book about the artisans of Venice.
Oh, are you?
Oh, I thought I told you. Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, yes, I am.
So
the other day I was walking around with my photographer that I'm so happy. You will discover it, guys, ladies and gentlemen, when the book finally will be published, probably next year, I assume, because I still haven't wrote it yet. I'm working on it. I was walking around with my photographer. We were trying to compile a list of artisans because, you know, people keep saying Venice is dying, you know, it's all Chinese made souvenirs, blah, blah, blah. So at the end of a day, we were walking around, we managed to actually file a list and we haven't finished yet. Guess mm-hmm. the number of artisans, and I'm talking about unique artisans. I'm not even talking about people that in the same trade make the same stuff. I'm talking about each one is totally unique. Shoot a number.
Dozens. Hundreds.
100 at least 100. Yeah. Now, yeah. 100 artisans in a city that counts less than 50,000 people, in a city that is about 3 square kilometers, it's a lot. So I'm fed up of people telling us the Venice is dying. Venice is not dying. The artisans are there. All you got to do is walk into their shops and buy the stuff. Full stop.
Exactly. You know what? I normally tell my guests that walk around Venice with me that artisans today are those that keep Venice alive. Because, you know, there is some truth in the sense that Venice is dying and not that it's, you know, almost dead, but you know, we know that
it's suffering a lot.
You know, it is suffering. It is really suffering. For some points of view, it is dying because if you think that if you need spare parts for your washing machine, you have trouble, right? Yeah. So, you know, Venice is really suffering. But the artisans are those that keep Venice alive. If I can tell something about my personal experience.
Yeah, of course.
The reason why I'm so engaged with mm-hmm. artisans of all sorts, any kind of artisans, actually, although there are some that I prefer, some others that maybe don't appeal to my senses mm-hmm. that much.
Yeah, but of course. Everybody's got his preference. Yeah, I have mine, exactly. You have yours. Sometimes I have the same, sometimes they're not. Yeah, of course. It's normal.
Of course. But the reason why I'm so fond of artisans is that over my life, I've done a lot with my hands. Crochet, and cross stitching, but also creating dolls. I've done so much.
Let's say if you wouldn't been a guy, that you would have been
an artisan
yourself.
Yeah, yes. But okay. You know, the thing is that it's not that I have one single passion.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I never
like
focused. Yeah, I never focused on one thing that would make an artist out of me, because artisans, real ones, are also artists.
Absolutely.
That's how I feel, right?
Absolutely.
So nothing that could really make an artist out of me, because I have so many interests. The thing is that this helped me understand how long it takes to create something with your hands, how much effort you have to put on that, how expensive it is in terms of excellent materials that you use, and then you have to take into consideration how much time it takes to do that.
Yes,
of course, if you specialize on one thing, eventually it'll take less time, right?
Yeah, but it takes you years to get there. Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
Before we start on our on your list, because it's, I have my list, but you have your list. On
of
your
course.
List or list of your personal kind of loves, okay, mm-hmm. let's say, I just would like to get some, I would like to give some guidelines for people coming to Venice and visiting the artisans, if you don't mind. And then if you have to add more to mine, you feel free.
Sure.
So number one, and this I'm sorry, I did it myself. So that's why I tell you not to do it, because I've been there, done there, and it shouldn't be done again. It is to walk into an artisan shop, spend hours talking to them, asking them thousands of questions, taking thousands of photos, and then walk out without buying anything. Because remember, and I swear, I apologize to all my dear artisan friends that did it, but now I'm doing it with a purpose, but back then I did it, so I have my biggest apologies to them, but I made up in... in publicity.
Well, you know, no.
Okay.
But you
never
know,
mind. Okay.
Yeah, at first you might not know, but then if someone tells you, you know how to behave.
Exactly. So don't buy even the smallest of the things, but buy something. Because obviously, if you take away an hour of their time, it is an hour that they weren't working. Number two, remember that when you buy something handmade, there's no way it's going to cost like something that's made by a machine, repetitive with cheap materials. So obviously,
everything is unique. Every single item is unique.
Yeah. The materials, of course, are expensive. And above all, now prices have gone double. Their time. Why are you willing to pay hundreds for a notary, for a lawyer, for a an architect, whatever, but you're not willing to pay the right amount for the time of an artisan? It took him years, or her, it took years for that person to get to the skills that he has. So, rightly so, he should be paid for his time just as much. Okay. Third, it is unique. It's not going to be done in numbers, in series. It is each piece is unique. And that's how you are recognize an artisan. Then when you walk in, feel free to ask them questions because they are happy to tell you. But make sure that you walk out buying. Otherwise, you are just using them, literally using them. Because experience tourism, you know, experimental tourism, they call it. Beautiful. It's beautiful. Fantastic. We love it with storytelling. But guys, you know, they're not actors, artisans. They're workers.
Exactly.
To pay bills. Okay.
And that's really one of my points. Because probably you already know, except for giving tours, in particular to families with children that I really enjoy, I'm getting really into experience tourism. Mm-hmm. But a lot that I see around is just, you know, guests playing, you know, with the local artisans, imagining that they might be actors on a stage. This is not correct. I mean, it's not the right way to take it. What I really love is to give the possibility to my guests to have hands-on experiences at the artisans workshops, but now with the aim of creating something. Okay, we're happy, I have my little thing, and that's it. No, the thing that they should become aware of is how many skills are needed to do that thing, how long does it take to learn how to do it perfectly, and
how bloody hard it is to do it.
Exactly. At that point, you know, why does this thing that was created manually in a workshop cost 100 euros if I can find it at a simple store for 20 euros?
Or less.
Well, because the one that you find in the store is not handmade. The raw materials are of less quality. They're done in series and all that. And he said, if you try to do something with your own hands, you realize how it is to be an artisan. You'll figure out that what you create might be nice, of course, and it's interesting, but it'll never be perfect as the one that comes out from the hands of the artisan, just because of the years and years and years of training, you know, that the artisans had to do to get to that point.
And you actually see in front of your eyes history. Because you have to remember,
Exactly.
Protestants are, most of them, not all, but most of them, comes from a longer lineage of family that have been doing the same trade and the same skills and the same crafts for so long. So you're actually looking at history. So, you know.
Exactly, exactly. Sometimes, okay, it happened to me recently, and it's a workshop that we both know, a workshop that creates a spectacular works of art made out of chocolate.
Oh, okay, yes. So we will not, we will now name it. Yeah, yeah, we can name
it. No, no, no,
we can,
no,
we can.
No,
no, no, I don't mind Nick. Oh, well, we definitely got to name it.
But yeah, maybe you'll have a podcast. I mean, one of your
no, they won't. They don't them. Because they don't speak English. You know, because
no.
You know, you have to remember when I go there doing the tastings, I'm actually the one speaking in English.
Anyhow, anyhow, one thing that happened to me some time ago is that why would you spend that much money for a piece of chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
There, if it costs one half or even less at the supermarket, but what do you get at that workshop, and what do you get at the supermarket in terms of quality? All right, in terms of choosing the right raw materials, and then you know, walking into this workshop, you can actually see St. Mark's Basilica made out of chocolate.
I know,
right?
And the smell in there.
Ooh. Yeah, and it's, yeah, well, and the overall experience, right? So it's not only a matter of money, it's a matter of, you know, being, having the perception of what being an artisan means. Mm-hmm. So if experience tourism is not like that, getting to know the artisans and how important they are for Venice today, mm-hmm. how important they are in general, then you realize that why you buy and was made in series, of course it's cheaper, but it's not the same.
Exactly.
And I think this is my personal opinion, and of course it's difficult, you know, to turn it into practice nowadays, but what I feel is that personally I should buy less
mm-hmm.
food, clothes, mm-hmm. accessories, whatever,
mm-hmm. and better
but of
quality.
Better quality,
yeah.
And that will last longer. The point is that today you change clothes every day, you change your bag every day, I mean your purse every day, you change whatever every day, and if you keep carrying the same purse mm-hmm. for 10 years, eventually people think that it's cheap, you know, that mm-hmm. You're not taking care of yourself, you're not
mm-hmm.
Fashionable enough, but that's, you know, consuming,
yes.
consuming,
yeah. Yeah.
And this is also part of tourism, you know, hitting mm-hmm. every city. I've been there,
yeah.
only for some hours sometimes,
yeah.
That's a consuming tourist,
yeah.
touristic place,
places. To, you know, people need to slow down. So,
exactly.
Monica,
yeah.
What, some artisans now, because we said we're going to mm-hmm. give them some names. Go on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start. Go. They're all.
Oh, okay.
The floor is yours, as they
actually
say.
Actually, naming the artisans. Okay, right?
I mean, 100. No, we can't do 100. So some.
No. Okay. Let's
your favorite.
Start, let's start with the artisans that I work with.
Yeah.
As far as experiences are concerned, right? And one of the workshops that I really like is called Arzanart.
Yes. Beautiful.
And, yeah, and they create decorated paper mm-hmm. Entirely by hand. And with that paper, of course, they also create notebooks, earrings, accessories of all sorts, pencils, and so on, right?
Where are they based?
They have this workshop at Barbaria delle Tole, which is a, and the name is a program
massively
itself.
Long, but yeah.
Yes. And it's close to Santi Giovanni e Paolo, the Church mm-hmm. of the Saints, John and Paul. So it's north of St. Mark's, very close to St. Mark's area. But it's, there are some guests there, but I wouldn't say that it's one of the crowdiest areas in Venice. It's interesting to go there because you can try on your own to decorate a paper exactly the same way as they do. Of course, assisted by the two of them, it's a husband and wife, Isabel and Federico. And of course, they tell you about the skills. And again, at that point, you understand that before you get that notebook, you have to create the paper.
Of course, of course.
You know,
of
for
course.
The binding. And so it's not simply a notebook. It goes, it goes beyond that. Mm-hmm. And so you understand how long it takes. And then how skillful you have to be to obtain the perfect decorations. What I really love is beads, the Venetian beads. I'm really passionate. I'm really fond of beads.
Me and Monica usually are fighting over when we go to events or we go we always kind of is implied who's gonna wear the most beautiful necklace that day.
okay it's just that we're not on a video, we're just recording, right? I am full of stuff that is handmade. I have a necklace, a bead necklace.
You know, I don't know you, but I will need not 365 days a year. I think I will need like 2,000 days a year if I wear
everything
I have in jewelry that I bought in Venice.
Exactly.
And above all, beads.
Yeah. As far as beads are concerned, of course, Marisa Convento is an institution.
Of course.
Not only because of her skills, not only because of the beauty of the stuff, jewels that she creates.
Marisa was my first ever episode. The first ever episode of Venice Talks.
I do remember.
Yeah. And so she, obviously, for people that are listening, but maybe didn't listen to the first season, she was on the first episode, but she's also the president of a committee for the safeguard of the art.
Exactly. Of the glass
beads.
And that's
right.
yeah. And that's what I was going to say. So not only for her skills, for the beautiful things that she creates, but also because of her commitment to the arts and crafts in general, and in particular, because she's also a member of Confartigianato and so on.
Oh, yes. Vice president.
Yeah, exactly.
everywhere.
Everywhere. She's really committed to artisans in general. I mean, to take forward as much as possible artisans in Venice, and in particular, of course, to bead creation. I mean, to creations made out of beads. Mm-hmm. Another one that I got to know recently is Luisa Conventi.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that also works with beads, creating jewels and accessories that are totally different from Marisa's.
Of course.
And so this also shows how different artisans can be, how many different experiences and histories that might be behind artisans. They use the same materials to create something that is totally different. Mm-hmm. What is interesting about Luisa Conventi is that she has created a little museum.
I haven't seen it yet. I need to go.
You should go and just tell me about it. I'll take you there. And
good.
It'll be amazing to go over the museum once more. If I can add something, up till the 4th, I believe, or 5th of April, Luisa Conventi in her museum has a temporary exhibit of accessories made out of Venetian beads, mainly of the 1800s, that were created by the Native Americans, what we call American Indians. Okay.
Ooh.
It's amazing. And it's Venetian beads imported to America, the United States in the 1800s.
And now they came back. Wow.
And now they came back. And Marisa, by the way, created one of her corals for me, talking about Marisa now.
Yeah.
But she used beads that had been sold had been purchased from Venice by Americans and had been sold to America. But then she found some of such beads in America and she brought them back to Venice.
No way, that is
yes,
so
beads
funny.
Of the 1800s. And it's
oh
this
my God.
Brown coral that she made
nice.
For me that is really incredible. So it's beads, the history of beads itself, it's so wonderful.
Oh,
and
well,
Rose
listen,
Marisa,
if I want to hear about the history of beads, oh, we got to, if listener, you just got to go and listen to episode number one of season
exactly
one,
Marisa,
because Marisa
yeah,
talked for
is
hours about that.
An expert, and Louisa as well with her museum. It's just wonderful, and you think it's just glass beads. Just learn the history of that, and then you realize how special they are. One more thing about beads is those that create not the small beads, but the bigger ones. And one of my favorite artisans, but she's not the only one, right, is Alessia Fuga.
Again, I think she's on episode two, I think.
If it's not two,
it's season
three,
one.
It's one of the first, I'm pretty sure. Of course, you know, because... again, it's people that are committed not only to their
Alessia,
job, but
with
Alessia in general.
With Alessia, if you take them, you can people can actually, you know, obviously you're gonna take them, but they can actually learn how to make a bead,
create
just
their own bead. And when I talk about artisans and workshops that you can actually do there, I've done all the workshops myself, okay? Yeah. It's something that I do first to understand whether it's like a game, you know, like joking around, fooling around, or if it is an experience that makes you learn how it is to be an artisan, right? And so,
okay.
And this is really
have you got some very quickly, because the time is running.
We're running out of time.
Yes. So another couple of names, and then obviously people are going to have to call you to organize these things. But so another couple of names to tantalize people into going into some experience tourism in Venice.
Okay, let me name just one might sound, you know, okay, there are so many more, so
of
I
course,
apologize
of
for
course,
those
we're
that
not gonna,
I'm not
yeah.
naming,
yeah,
but it's
yeah,
not
they
giving
got
a
to
list.
Call, well, listen, they,
right?
they got to call you to
yeah, and we have so many different opportunities,
exactly.
And of course, okay. One company that I really love, and they are artisans, is Venice on Board. They have a little squero, a little boatyard, where they repair historical boats. And they have some sort of a mission as a company. They're one of their ideals is to go back to tradition. Okay, let's get rid as much as possible. It's impossible to get rid totally, but let's get rid as much as possible of motorboats and let's go back rowing, because there are a whole lot of things that you can simply do by a lot of places where you can go. And, you know, like going to the grocery store or whatever, by using your boat. It's not actually possible today, but that's their aim, you know, to transmit this love for boats, for rowing boats. And what they do, and that's the part, okay, as artisans, they restore boats. But what they do as an experience, they teach you how to row the Venetian way, because in Venice we row standing and not sitting, right? And facing the bow, not the stern.
Of course.
And that's different. And again, it's fun, because it is a lot of fun, but it gets you deeper into the Venetian culture.
Of course. And it's suitable for everybody.
Everybody, okay, for children, I should ask, but like from 10 years old on, 11 years old on, and even for the elder, because it's not that difficult. And of course, there will be always one of the guys with you in case you cannot row anymore. They'll take care of the boat.
Yeah,
you're fully safe, right? So, yeah, it's something that really deserves to be mentioned, and then a whole lot more. And I just can't wait to read your book, because I'm pretty sure that I'll find more.
Oh, I'm pretty sure. Listen, so people can not just book with you the tours for the children, your treasure hunts, of which we spoke about in season one, but obviously they can book this experiential kind of tour. Okay. Yes. Where can they find you? On your website, and where can they find you on social medias?
Okay, so I am in social medias, on social medias with my name, Monica Gambarotto, and also I have, and also with the name of my website, which is guidedtoursinvenice.com.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and my website has a that I share with two good colleagues of mine. Is full of options, opportunities, ideas for a tour.
And so just to say, you can organize mask making, you can organize, as you were saying, the tasting with the chocolate, you can organize the bean make, everything. I mean, much more than this. So all people got to do is to send you an inquiry and say, look, I would like to try something like this. And you go, I got the person for you.
Of course, I can personalize the tour from classical tours, because when you come to Venice first, maybe you want to see the Doge's Palace and St. Mark's Basilica, right?
That's mandatory. Of course.
But then also, if you spend more days in Venice, why not? Why not to get hands-on on something that is really valuable in a city like Venice?
Monica, it was so nice talking to you, because I know you haven't been well for the last few days. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Monica. It's been a real pleasure.
I know. And I'm definitely calling you for season three.
Okay. Definitely.
And I'm pretty sure we can talk about something else. And thank you again for everything you do for Venice. And I can't wait to see you in the city soon. Hopefully when I launch the new book, the one for the islands of Venice.
I need your autograph.
Book. Okay. Thank you again.
All right, Monica. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Ciao, carissima.
A big hug. Ciao.
Thank you so much, Monica, for the wonderful chat. You can find Monica at guidedtoursinvenice.com and on all social medias as Monica Gambarotto. Thank you again for listening. Venice Talks podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created, produced, and hosted by me, Monica Cesarato. Follow Venice Talks wherever you get your podcast, and if you want to book a food tour or a cooking experience with me, you can find me over at www.monicacesarato.com and on all social medias with the handle at Monica Cesarato, where you can follow my adventures around Venice. And don't forget, if you love this episode, please rate it and leave a review. It's very much appreciated.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's sentiremedia.com, and find out how to submit your show.